For the sake of the audience, I want you all to know they are referring to a young man who was killed in Allen Temple. Chief Shields and I met with the family yesterday. I know that our district attorney, Paul Howard, has also met with the family. It is part of an FBI investigation. What we shared with the family on yesterday was that because this was part of a federal task force, unfortunately, the investigation is being handled by the FBI. But what Chief Shields, and I thank Chief Shields for facilitating the meeting with the family, I and Chief Shields profusely apologize for not meeting sooner, because it is a part of an active investigation. But what I will share with you, what I share with the family, is that in any way, if our actions or inactions and not meeting with them sooner has caused them any additional grief, then that is the absolute last thing that I would want to do to any family. So it was a private meeting, but because they are here speaking on his behalf, I am sharing that with you so that you can also be informed.
All right. I thought I would play that audio clip to set the tone for the first portion of today's special ed. Welcome to a big exclusive. I am Valerie Denise Jones. Thank you guys so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me today. This was impromptu, so I appreciate all parties involved. Thank you so much for your support. 929-477-1167, 929-477-1167 is the number. I need you to share on social media if you have other people who would like to engage us, because we definitely welcome that. We welcome anybody who has something to contribute to the conversation, as long as it's based on facts, not just opinion. Always, right? We respect your opinion, but we do like it when you bring facts. So we're going to just go on and move into the first portion of this. And again, I am Valerie Denise Jones. We have got Attorney Gerald Griggs on the line. I will let him introduce himself after I play this audio clip. But for those of you, I see the board is filling up. The audio clip that was played a few seconds ago was an audio where protesters in Atlanta entered a room during a press conference. It's supposed to be a closed session, but they were in there chanting. And here is a little more of the backstory. And when we come back, Attorney Griggs will bring him in, get his info, and then we'll talk.
Well, Aisha, as you know, we covered three officer-involved shootings, and the GBI is now investigating all three of those, which is more common than not.
Yeah, right, Ron. So, but not in the case of Jimmy Acheson. The GBI confirms Atlanta police did not request GBI's help investigating the officer-involved shooting that led to his death earlier this year. Hope Ford tells us why.
So Jimmy Acheson was shot by Atlanta Police Officer Sung Kim on January 22nd. Officer Kim was working on an FBI-led task force the day of the shooting, making this a federal investigation of a local police shooting. Acheson's family said they've heard nothing, and they want to know why he was killed.
It bothers me because we don't know the truth.
These are Jimmy Acheson's advocates, a lawyer, a pastor, his aunt. They want to know what happened before Officer Kim shot him. The FBI says Atlanta Officer Kim was serving Acheson a warrant while serving on their task force when he ran from officers into an apartment and was shot. And that's where the story seemingly stops. But Tanya Miller, the family's attorney, says they've collected statements and photos from witnesses, which shows Acheson was hiding in a closet and surrendering to police.
Officer Kim shot Jimmy Acheson in the face when he was unarmed. That shooting was not justified.
He was in a closet. And I think that cannot be swept under the rug or ignored that he's literally trapped between himself and a hangar.
Atchison's family believes this is a case of excessive force, which Kim has been accused of in the past. His personnel files show high marks for professionalism throughout his career, but two internal investigations reveal he was accused of using excessive force. Both were found to have a lack of evidence to prove or disprove the claims. Right now, Kim is on paid administrative duty while the FBI investigates. Miller says the family is worried the Atchison investigation will mirror the investigation of Jamarion Robinson, a man who was shot by an FBI task force member in 2016. In that case, Fulton County District Attorney Paul Howard filed a lawsuit 2 years later against the U.S. Department of Justice, claiming the agency failed to provide information about the shooting. In early March of this year, Miller sent this demand letter on behalf of the family, claiming no one from the FBI has offered them any answers and claiming the FBI refuses to publicly admit Atchison was unarmed at the time of the shooting. The letter goes on to accuse the FBI of usurping a GBI investigation to, quote, control the flow of information to the public. The letter ends with a request for a meeting with investigators and update on the case. So far, that's yet to happen.
It makes me feel that my nephew may be another statistic, but we're not going to let that happen.
And the family said without hearing from the city of Atlanta, APD, or FBI, that leaves them with one option, and that's protest. They will harness social media using the hashtag #JusticeForJimmy to bring awareness to the investigation. The FBI declined to comment on the demand letter or the status of the investigation.
All right, guys, that's it. So at this time, I'd like to welcome Attorney Gerald A. Griggs. Welcome, welcome. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the platform, and thank you for highlighting the family's struggle for justice in Jimmy Atchison's case. As the news clips said, Jimmy was shot on January the 22nd, 2019, which is a couple days before the Super Bowl, which is why a lot of the nation has not heard of Jimmy Atchison, but he was shot in a Southwest Atlanta apartment in his face while he was unarmed. And since then, the mayor went 2 months ignoring the family until she was forced to meet with them right before that town hall, where they protested and elevated their voices in displeasure. This is actually the sixth police-involved shooting that I know of in the city of Atlanta in the last 6 months. Jimmy Atchison, Oscar Kane, Deatrick Griffin, and a few other young gentlemen have been killed by Atlanta police in the last 6 months alone. And the nation has not been told of the police brutality issues that are happening here in the city of Atlanta, but there is a serious sense of unrest here, which is going to culminate in a large march, which will be occurring here in the city of Atlanta to go directly to the Atlanta Police Department to ask for justice for Mr. Jimmy Atchison. It will be May the 24th, 2019, at noon. And the reason for the march is simply, in several cases, the police chief has basically said the same thing. She doesn't know why her officers aren't cutting on their body cams. We don't know why this individual was shot. We don't know whether this individual was unarmed. And these are simply unacceptable. And so for the family of Jimmy Atchison and the other young men that have been killed in the last 6 months, it's time to send a message directly to Atlanta police. You know, we marched and protested a lot of other establishments, but not the police department itself. So, again, May the 24th, there will be a protest at noon in the city of Atlanta. We hope that many people will come. We're opening up to your listeners and anybody on social media. Just go to the hashtag Jimmy Atchison or Justice for Jimmy or We Are Jimmy Atchison to get more information. But currently, the family has met with the police chief, has met with the mayor, met with the U.S. attorney. The case has now been sent back from the FBI to the GBI. So the FBI wasted 3 months investigating to turn it back over to the GBI. And we still don't know what happened to Mr. Atchison. We know he was unarmed. We know he was shot in his face in a direct straight line behind his eye, and it killed him. And so the community is angry. The community is focused. They will be going to city council on May the 6th to bring their displeasure directly to council because no one from council has spoken directly to the family. And it just underscores in a city that's supposedly too busy to hate, the black mecca with black leadership, that even black people are not paying enough attention to the issue of police brutality in this country.
So what is Officer Kim's status, if you don't mind?
He's still on administrative
us.
Leave. He's been on administrative leave since January the 22nd, 2019. The family is calling for his immediate dismissal because he has not only this case but two other previous cases of police brutality on his record. So they're calling on the police chief to terminate him, but she keeps saying that the investigation has not completed, so she can't make a determination.
Again, people, the hashtag is Justice for Jimmy, and the event is on May 24th at noon. Is there a website dedicated to this protest?
There's not a website. Again, the hashtag takes you to all the social postings. We are working on a website, which will be Justice for Jimmy. But right now we're just asking people to share under the hashtag so that more attention can be brought to this case. Again, it didn't receive national media coverage because it happened a few days before the Super Bowl, and there was a media blackout on talking about police brutality cases right before a Super Bowl, which was being protested because of police brutality in the city of Atlanta.
Okay. Well, what is your Twitter ID? Because you do post a lot there. So can you share
okay.
that with our
attorney,
listening audience?
Sure. I'm Attorney Griggs on all social platforms, ATTORNEYGRIGGS. Or you can follow the Atlanta NAACP page, NAACP Atlanta, on all social platforms.
Okay. And I was trying to take note. Did you mention that, I mean, is there anything that the community can do, like sign, is there GoFundMe, anything else that I might have missed? Because I didn't write that in my notes.
Yeah, there is a petition that is up on pushblack.com. You can go to the pushblack.com website and sign the petition for Justice for Jimmy. We're trying to get 100,000 signatures calling for the firing of Officer Kim. So, again, go to pushblack.com and sign the petition. And contact our mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms, or Police Chief Erica Shields. You can contact them on atlanta.org, the website cityofatlanta.org, and just let them know the displeasure with this. Mr. Atchison was a father of two. He was a brother with 14 siblings. He's very included in the community in Southwest Atlanta. He was an aspiring rapper who had a couple songs that were on SoundCloud. He was just a nice guy. There is information out there that says that he was an armed robbery suspect. We investigated that. It turned out that he was not actually the person who committed the armed robbery, and there are several witnesses to that. So there was no reason for law enforcement to accost him and shoot him in the face and then let him bleed out on a mattress. Again, if you go to Justice for Jimmy, you'll see the pictures of the interior of the home, the closet, and some video of the first walkthrough that happened a day afterward. So you can see it all as we know it in real time.
Wow. And the audio, I think it mentioned that the officer's body cam was turned off. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, we don't know if the officer had body cam. They still haven't released that. But from our understanding, there is no body camera footage. So we've requested that as well. We just got a copy of the ME's report, which shows that he was shot in his face, and that was the cause of death. And we're just trying to get answers from the GBI now as to whether or not there was, in fact, body cam on Officer Kim. Now, there was another case, Oscar Kane, which was about a month and a half after Jimmy, where there was a body camera that was cut off.
Mm-hmm.
So there are multiple cases
all right.
in the city of Atlanta.
Right. So we have got a an officer. Let's see if he can help us out with this. Welcome, Officer Darnell Whitaker. We got Attorney Griggs on the line. Is there anything that you could lend to this situation? Any backstory? Any notes? Anything we can do that he hasn't thought of already?
It's just another example of failed black leadership. You got black mayor. Is the police chief in Atlanta? Is she black?
No, she's Caucasian.
Okay, well, she's going to protect her brand. But the mayor's silent on it because the police chief works for the mayor. And as long as she tolerates it and lets it go, it's not going to change. That's going. That's the culture of policing in this nation. It's a sad. It's a real sad thing about it, that they don't want to be held accountable for making a mistake or cleaning out the officers that make the police department bad.
Definitely. And another thing that people need to know, a majority of the city council is African American. The commissioner of public safety is an African American. So this is the black mecca. I mean, we have black leadership in every post.
But y'all need to find out who's really running Atlanta. Because
I agree with you.
If all these black officials are quiet, somebody's telling them what to do. I mean, it's sad. Because you got a black mayor and you got police brutality in a black neighborhood and they're not addressing it. You know, whites get elected, they blatantly protect their own and don't care about what the blacks think. Blacks get elected, we're too scared to make an image. If you're a black official and you're not helping the black agenda, then you'll waste your time in the vote.
I definitely agree, and that's one of the reasons why I think you guys have probably seen on social media the mayor is supposed to be giving a commencement speech at Spelman College, and the Spelman College students are protesting the fact that the mayor is coming.
Right. I mean, you're not addressing the issue. You're not cleaning up the issues that hopefully that you was elected on. So why you come there and try to pass out flowers when you need to be out here addressing the issue? Like I said, so the truth is you got to find out who's really running Atlanta. The GBI report is not going to be any different.
Right. I wanted to ask you, Attorney Griggs, because later on during today's show, we're actually going to talk about the fact that T.I. was recently recognized for his philanthropy efforts, trying to talk and whatever. But, yes, he was recently recognized. So should you pull on, you know, try and get the attention of celebrities in the area, people like T.I., who have, you know, to kind of sway the leaders in the community.
It would be my hope that my friend, Mr. Clifford Harris, would join the movement for justice for Jimmy. We will reach out to him. Pastor Jamal Bryant, who's recently relocated down here to Atlanta, has signed on, and we will be speaking to his congregation about Jimmy's case and several other celebrities. That we will be reaching out to. Killer Mike is one that comes to mind. A lot of the rappers who are now talking
about
social
justice. Is David
Banner
in that area too?
David Banner is in the area as well as 21 Savage. So, you know, we will be having these conversations. But the main issue is this is happening in our community. And, you know, with the loss of social justice advocate that we had in Nipsey, hopefully somebody in Atlanta would step up and fill that void here in Atlanta and speak to these issues. There have been 6 police-involved shootings, killings in the city of Atlanta that have not been addressed by Atlanta's mayor, and it's time for one of our artists, one of our entertainers who are big in the city to say something about this so we can address it. A lot of them supported her during her campaigning. It's time now to hold her accountable for the lack of conversation and action that is happening in the African-American community on her watch.
What's the name of the lady who, I'm drawing a blank, who Oprah came in to support?
That'd be Stacey Abrams.
There, yes, her.
Yes.
Is she still in your area? Because I know she was running for a different office.
She is. Currently she's trying to make a decision on whether or not she will run for Senate or run again governor, or she may run for president. But she has reached out and has inquired about this case, and hopefully she will lend her voice at some point when she makes her decision whether or not to run. But she has been an advocate for these issues.
Okay. All right. So I guess what we will continue to do is just push, just keep sharing this. And you said you need 100,000 signatures.
100,000 signatures.
PushBlack.com.
PushBlack.com.
Where are you now?
Okay. Currently, we just started the petition, so we don't have any signatures. We just started it yesterday. But we are going to push that out moving forward, and we plan on delivering it during the March. That's one of the things we're going to deliver. So we have till May the 24th to get 100,000 signatures, and I know there's at least 100,000 people in the state of Georgia who have who care about these type of issues. So I'm sure we will get that.
Okay. All right. Gosh, I wish Cassandra McDonald was on the line, because I would like for her to chime in as well. Yeah, so I guess the best thing that I can do is to continue pushing this and sharing it with other people, other celebrities who might reach out and say something as well. And then I guess closer to the 24th, do you think that you could come back so we could continue this in
sure.
addition to, yeah, if I, what I'll probably have you do, she says she hears it, but I don't see her on the board. I want her to chime in. Wait, maybe this is her. 216-356, 216-356.
Hello?
Hi. Hi, Ms. Hey, McDonald. Here. Welcome,
Hi.
Welcome. Another NAACP chief. We got two of you on the
line. Got two of them. Okay.
Yeah. Welcome, Ms. Cassandra. Come in and introduce yourself, and then let's talk. Let's see what else we can do to expand this conversation.
Okay, sure. Hi, Attorney Griggs. Always a pleasure, you know, listening to you and, you know, your expertise on subject matter such as this. And Valerie, always thank you for inviting me to the show. As you stated, my name is Cassandra McDonald, and I'm the founding president of the NAACP, a civil rights activist, as well as analyst. So those are the things that I do in the community.
Okay. And you have experience with this. He said that he's pretty sure that he can achieve the goal of 100,000 signatures. But what else do you think needs to be done? Because six police shootings in 6 months, that's pretty high average, I would think. Well, what are the averages, Attorney Griggs, that someone is fired, someone from the police department is actually fired? Say, I know in Florida, not so
it's
much,
very,
but
it's very rare. Last year was the bloodiest year on record in the state of Georgia for police involved shootings. We had 59 police killings. We had about 80 confirmed citizens that were shot. So it was the bloodiest year on record in 2018, and it seems to be on task in 2019 to surpass even that. So we have to have police departments and CEOs who are over the counties and police chiefs to be serious, and the mayors to be serious about this issue, because there is a rise in police-involved shootings around the country, but particularly in Georgia. And so I think that, you know, I can only think of three or four officers who've been terminated. There have only been two officers that I know of that have been convicted and sentenced to lengthy prison sentences, but there are numerous cases. So we just have to make sure we put pressure on our elected officials at the ballot box, but more importantly at their town halls and at their offices, that this is a very serious issue in our community that needs to be addressed immediately.
And the six people who were shot, are they African-American or
yes.
minorities?
Those are all African-Americans.
So what do you think is the real problem, police versus minorities? I mean, do you think these are, quote-unquote, hate crimes of a different nature?
I think that there's a militarism of law enforcement in minority communities that needs to be addressed. I think the way that law enforcement responds in those communities is different. There's a shoot first, ask questions later mentality, and we have to address it. There was a young man in Cobb County who was assaulted by law enforcement at the IHOP, and they said they felt fear. But there was a young lady at the Braves baseball stadium who reached for an officer's gun twice, and she was not brutalized. So there is a philosophy in certain communities that we treat certain people differently and we police differently in those communities.
All right.
It's a,
Ms. McDonald,
it's a philosophy
I'd like to hear
across
from
the nation.
Yes.
All right. So I want to, I guess, give you guys a chance to talk to Officer Whitaker. I'd like to fall back for a second again so we can get out as much information, ask as many questions while we've got him on the line, and also expand the conversation so that we can get people involved. They know how important this issue is, because when I was on YouTube, I found very little information, and then even the videos that were dedicated to this, the views were very, very low. I don't recall one being over 1,000, and they were all by news stations. So, Ms. McDonald and Officer Whitaker, what can you lend? Do you have anything else you can add to this?
For me, I think that Attorney Griggs said a couple of things that are very important as far as the militancy of how police officers approach Black individuals. I think that there is an expectation of aggression from Black adults as well as Black youth. So I think they're going into it expecting type of altercation, and that mindset needs to be changed. I also think that when it comes to electing officials, like we focus on the mayor because, yes, the mayor does control, pretty much the police force, but I also think that we should be cognizant of our council members because they can put forth legislation to change a lot of the way that policies and laws are played out, and that it goes as far as what the mayor's powers are, what they can do, as well as when it comes to law enforcement, too. So I think there's some things that we can work with there. Also, I think that people get into these elected seats, and there's this ambiance that, you know what, I came in here wanting to do something, but when I get in here, I don't want to rock the boat, or I don't want to challenge this because I may lose my seat. Well, the thing is, that's a false sense of security, because especially coming from being Black, you know, how secure do you really think you are in that seat anyway? Which brings me back to the point where who's really running the city? Who's really dictating what goes on? So we can't be comfortable in the aspect of when, you know, I have this seat, you know, I'll say a couple of things, but I'm just going to sit here, because when you look around and you're afraid to go outside, or, you know, you have protesters out there because you're not doing your job, that should be an expectation, because you should be for the people in any elected seat that you possess, that you hold. And we also need to be cognizant about running individuals on the ballot and voting for them just because they're Black, because it comes down to, yes, we want more of Black people to take these elected seats, because we're hoping that they can understand, because they've been in certain experiences that others may not have, that, you know what, I can do this, I can relate to this, I understand this, but that doesn't mean that because they can relate to it and understand it that they're actually going to work to fix it. So there's a lot of different levels that we can be approaching this issue.
Yeah, definitely. And I think on that policy issue, I think we need to be very thoughtful on our body cam policy. I think that's the main issue in Atlanta. People advocated for body cams, but the policies written around the use of body cams in Atlanta are so ambiguous and not concise that officers can go around them. They can cut them off. They can not have them attached. And I think that's what we really need to do in Atlanta and around the country. There needs to be a concise response in the SOPs to body cams. The first time you cut it off, 30-day suspension. The second time you cut it off, you're terminated regardless of the situation. That way people can have confidence in what they're seeing, what happened, and we can get it to the public. And on your point about elected officials, yes, if you ran on a platform that you understood the issues in certain communities and then you get in that office and you turn a blind eye, we should not be voting for you regardless of color. This is about speaking to the issues and accomplishing policy change and empowering our communities. And if you're not speaking that language both in office and when you're running for office, then we have to rearrange how we do things when it comes to electoral politics. Because even here in Atlanta, we have a mayor that ran on one platform, but now that she's in office, we're having to push her to get the platform that she ran on. No affordable housing, no dealing with the issues of police brutality, you know, gentrification is running rampant, and nobody's really calling her on these issues until there's a six deaths, and now we're saying, oh, what's happening? So I think we have to be more aggressive in how we communicate with our elected officials on council and in the mayor's office.
Officer Darnell?
You have to fight. The true question is, who is running that lap? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
Somebody's running that lap. Somebody's running Atlanta. She's a puppet. Because if she won't address these issues, then she's a puppet. If you allow this same mentality to go on with your police force, then you're a puppet. I mean, there's been cases in small towns. I think it was one in Alabama where the black lady won for mayor and the white police force quit. That shows real power. But with her, it's no shame. So, and even with the city council. So now it's time for Atlanta to regroup. The Black Mecca to elect truly black officials that represent the community. Now, just because you can come in and hire more black police officers, as long as you still got that same mentality, things aren't going to change. That's a proven fact. So you got to get from top to bottom, it's got to be house clean. But now she just won for mayor how long ago?
A year and a half ago.
So she's got a long way to go. So who's ever run Atlanta, they got exactly what they want. So y'all have to vote her out, but y'all got to vote somebody in that's truly going to change the police department and change those problems that's coming. If she's not addressing gentrification, then she's in somebody's pocket. She's a puppet, and you all got played, which is sad because I remember when she got ran, a lot of people had hopes for her. I mean, the police force is only going to do what they know they can get away with. So if they came in and they had fear of her doing that, then they wouldn't do this because she would have said, okay, you shot this man. It was unjustified. I'm going to fire you. Because here's the thing. She could fire him, and if they find it justified, he gets his job back, then he sues and he gets his job back. If it wasn't, then he can't sue and he got fired. Hey, sometimes you got to have the balls to take that chance to do it, and she's not doing it, and she's not addressing it. So she's showing which side she's on. She's not on the side of the community. Now, I'm retired law enforcement. I don't take bullshit from either side, and it's sad that she's done it, and you get all these black elected officials that don't help the black community. Prime example in Dallas with the police chief they have. She's black. She's not for black people. So, you know, it's very frustrating.
Definitely.
So, Cassandra and Attorney Griggs, what say you to naysayers who say we got two NAACP executives who are on the line? How does the NAACP play into this? Because I think a lot of people think that your agency has a magic wand and all they've got to do is just wave it over a situation and all will be well. So how does the NAACP factor into this situation?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, we are a civil rights organization, so we use the tools that we've inherited from our ancestors. We agitate, we litigate, and then we make sure that people get out to vote. So right now we're in agitation mode. We are getting the community together. We are raising awareness of the issue of the six individuals who have been shot in the city of Atlanta in the last 6 months. And we're bringing folks to town halls to ask the tough questions to our elected officials. Secondly, once we get the reports done, we make sure that we review all the witness statements and everything, then we start to litigate. So we start suing people. We might have to sue the city of Atlanta. We've already sent a demand letter in a couple of the cases. We're going to make sure that it gets into federal court. And then we have to get people to the ballot boxes with the appropriate information about our elected officials. We've told them we don't have any permanent friends nor permanent enemies. We just got permanent issues. If you are not about the issues of the community at the grassroots, we will expose that and we will get you voted out. So that's where we are. We don't have a magic wand. What usually happens is, when the NAACP gets agitated, elected officials take notice because they know that we speak for a large base of African Americans. But it seems in this town that an individual has forgotten who her base really is. So we may have to remind her. That's why we went to the town hall. That's why we can continue to go to public events and agitate until the entire community sees what's happening, and then we can mobilize the entire community.
Okay. Ms. McDonald, do you have anything before I ask my next question?
Yeah, so for us, you know, where we stay, where we are in Ohio, the thing is we're having this issue with a particular city that is now being called, you know, Little Ferguson, which is Euclid, Ohio. And, of course, we have our issue Cleveland, Ohio, when it came to the 137 shots with Melissa Russell and Timothy Williams. And we're still going through the process of the consent decree because we're finding that they're lagging in making sure, again, like Attorney Greg mentioned before, is the policy, keeping up with it. If this is what we say needs to happen, then we need to make sure that it gets done and it's not getting done. And it's the follow-through that hurts us a lot and the proactive thinking to kind of forecast, okay, we see this happening now, but down the line, how will this policy affect us negatively or could it affect us positively? And we really have to address it. So what I'm doing with the Euclid NAACP is that we're doing data collection. We're doing a lot of research. We're, you know, asking for public records because what we're finding is they want to say that when we get into it as civil rights activists, a lot of times you will hear they're picking with us or they're pointing fingers at the police and police are doing such a great job. Well, you know what? If they are, then let the records show that because we're going to get the numbers. These numbers are going to come directly from your agency, and these numbers are going to tell us how close we are to what we think is going on. So we're doing data collection. I'm in the process of filing a complaint with the DOJ. We're even looking at the schools because when we have an influx of African American students, we're looking at over the years has the disciplinary measures changed? Have they gotten more aggressive as the inclination of African-American students enter into the city? Because, again, that shows how are our policies, are they fair to us? So we're addressing that. We're also doing Get Out the Vote and, you know, mobilizing grassroots campaigns and actions to get people more involved. We want to involve the community. So those are just some of the things that we're doing to mobilize people and prepare people to, you know what, elections do matter. Don't let anybody tell you any different. Elections do matter. So we're trying to get people out to vote in this small community.
Okay. Attorney Greg, I want to ask you something because I was never, ever really clear how. Sure. Uh-huh.
Attorney Greg, how many? Mm-hmm. What was the voter turnout for that election for her in Atlanta?
It was kind of low. I think it was 40-45%. She only won by 600 votes.
Exactly. And it'll be, and if you all were to push the campaign, this is why turnout black voter turnout is low, because we've been bamboozled so many times that we just don't care. You know, they like, it don't matter who we vote for, and you get a low turnout. I'm in the Chicago area. 40% voted for the last mayor election of the two ladies. You know, nobody voted, you know, because everybody's like, it don't matter because they're both part of the machine. So now you're going to have the same thing and trying to get her voted out. People going to be like, it don't matter.
Yeah, that's what we got to agitate. We got to show them it does matter. So I definitely agree. You had a question?
Yeah, I do have a question. Just for clarity, and I'm just playing devil's advocate. I can't always because I don't know. I've never been to an actual protest per se, right? How effective are protests, and also how can we use social media the same way that when something goes viral, we use it, right? When we're talking hot topics, celebrity gossip, whatever. How can we blend those two together to make it truly effective so that we're talking about the same thing at the same time and we're adding to whatever it is the protest is meant to accomplish?
Okay. Protesting is highly effective. I can give you a couple of examples. Desmond Morrow, the football player that was beaten by law enforcement in Henry County, went viral. There were several marches and protests, and it ended with the felony charges being dismissed and the obstruction charge is being dropped, and now he's filing a lawsuit against law enforcement, which is going forward, all because of a protest followed up by social media, followed up by marches, followed up by litigation. And another example, which is the biggest example, is Mute R. Kelly. I mean, that's a protest. It's a social media protest that erupts into regular effective protesting, and then it goes back to social media. So when these situations occur, we need to raise awareness, and the best way to raise awareness is social media. Now, there are good points about social media and there are bad points, but let's say you can't make it to the protest for Jimmy on the 24th. You can sure hashtag it and share with all of your friends and all of your contacts. That way the wave starts and people start saying, oh, I heard about this case in the city of Atlanta where this young man was shot in the closet in his face. Hey, what's going on with that? You start, you know, sharing it, sending messages, sending photos with the hashtag, and it starts to grow. And then it bubbles out into a massive march. And then it goes into the pressure of the phone calls to city council and to the mayor's office, and it forces them to fire the officer, to put charges on the officer like they did with Officer Rose in Henry County. He's facing felony charges now. And so it's highly effective. It's just the problem is sometimes in the mainstream media, they don't ever show the conclusion. And so we need to, as social media, show the conclusion of the action. The teacher strike that happened in Los Angeles, where they had that one day where everybody left, that was started by social media posts and protests, and they got raises. We need to make sure we show the conclusion that shows here was the inception of the protest, here was the end of the protest, here were the tangible takeaways.
So how can we, because I don't want to sleep on the YouTubers, right, because a lot of them have large audiences. How can we get them involved? Like, what do we need to do? Like, how do you get their attention so that we can pitch this? Because I'm one of them, right?
Yeah,
and I will make sure.
I think the best way is to get into that community. Now, I'm new to the YouTube community, but being involved in Mute R. Kelly and the Robert Sylvester Kelly trial, I've learned a lot in the last 3 months. And so it's just engaging them to share the content. There's always an interesting and entertaining side to all of this, but, you know, some of the bloggers are just interested in the salacious stuff and not really the facts. So I think just engaging them and showing them that there's an interest. I mean, with these protests, I mean, Black Lives Matter, the hashtag, was one of the biggest hashtags in the world and still is. And so there's an audience for it. You just have to show them that there's an audience for it and connect the audiences together. There's another protest that's going on the Internet that I just learned a little bit about. It's the African Descendants of Slavery, ADOS, which I just learned about, which is actually a thing. That's a protest.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
You know, I got some concerns about some of the messaging in the protest, but it's a protest. So I think just connecting these movements and realizing that the Internet is the new television. And so when we have these conversations, ideas can come out of the conversations that are occurring online that have real-life consequences. And so I think just using that momentum from social media to inform people about what's going on from start to finish is what's going to help move stuff forward.
Okay. All right. So we do have time for maybe one or two questions because I want to also ask you about another case, and that's from you because you're an attorney. 858-322-858-322, you're live.
Yeah, this is Ali calling out of California.
Hey, Ali, how you doing?
All right. No disrespect or disagreements with anybody. I'm just saying what I'm saying, you know, so don't take it wrong even if you disagree. But I grew up out here in Los Angeles back in the late 60s, early 70s, and the killing never stopped. You know, we had people in office that was supposed to be on our side and that was talking, you know, against police brutality and all that. And that was back in way back in the late 70s, early 80s. We in 2019, we got to wake up and realize that They are killing us. They're not marching for us. They're killing us. So if I don't know about you guys, but if somebody killed my son, I'm not marching down the street, and I ain't voting for nobody. I'm going to go back and retaliate, period. And then that's the only solution that you're going to get gratification and satisfying of anything right now. Now, so what? I'm going to sit in jail for the rest of my life? Well, what am I missing? Because ain't nothing out here.
Real quick question.
At all.
GBI is in charge of the investigation, correct?
Yes.
So you know that the Atlanta City Council is out.
Yes.
So if GBI finds it not guilty, then they're going to stick by that. So be prepared for that verdict because that's their out. That's the oldest. That's the oldest play in the book. I mean, it's sad that it came to this situation. And Brother Ali, you know, our arming ourselves to go against the government is not going to work because we will be slaughtered within a day. That's exactly what they want to happen. Next topic.
Yeah. And just to finish on that, he's exactly right. You know, and arming yourself and going and fighting with the government, you will be labeled a black identity extremist and you will be exterminated. That's been shown over and over and over again. But when the GBI finishes their report, whether they clear the officer or not, there will be a federal lawsuit that's filed, and we will litigate this in federal court just like we've done case after case after case. And I can give y'all three cases that have already won. So I respect Mr. Ali's opinion, but we deal in facts. And so
exactly. That's
why I cut him off when he started talking about stuff that will get people in our community hurt.
Right. So I want to ask you, I have another police officer that's on the line, but I want to ask you real quick. When you are, we are in a very, very dark hour, and I think a lot of people, we're just exhausted. You know what I mean? It just seems like this is every day, and sometimes you just want to get up and celebrate, you know, who you are, celebrate the fact that you're alive, and you don't want the issue to be color all the time, but you do have this going on. And so it puts you in a certain space and you know, you grow agitated, right? And so you don't always know how to express yourself inwardly or outwardly, right? And so what do you say to people who, again, we get tired of praying and protesting and, you know, being the person who takes the high road. You, if they're not afraid to kill, you want to do this. You kind of want to match the energy sometimes. Who was it? It wasn't Frederick Douglass. It wasn't Marcus Garvey. It was I see him, but Baldwin, or Dick Gregory, somebody like that, someone I studied once upon a time, or maybe even Malcolm X, who said if they pick up a knife, I think it was Malcolm X, they pick up a knife, you got to pick up the knife, you know, and do the same almost, so to speak. And I understand what you're saying from a legal perspective, but how do you stop this when you're dealing with natural-born killers?
Valerie, I think this is the point that I think that so Attorney Griggs is correct because it's a certain way, yes, and we do get frustrated. And what do people do when their backs are against the wall? We're going to fight back. The thing is, are we fighting back in defense or fighting back because we're just fed up and so that person got killed, so I'm going to go out and kill? There are things that you will give up. Even if you don't care about your life, who am I responsible for that if I do this, I'm going to affect their lives and their lives are going to affect whose lives? So if this is a ripple effect. So there are people who believe, you know, in the Malcolm X, you hit me, I'm going to hit you back. Martin Luther King, I'm a peaceful protest. I'm going to march. I'm going to get hit, but I'm not going to hit back. I think there's a time and place for everything, and situations call for different situations. No, we're not saying, you know, take it and get beat. But what I'm saying is be smart in what you do and get ready for any consequence that is coming your way. Because for the simple fact, we can't just go and take the law into our own hands, which we want to do a lot of times, but we cannot do that because what's going to happen if they're already locking us up in mass numbers, What do you think is going to happen? We're going to extinguish our own race. We're going to do that. We're either going to be dead or in jail. Those are going to be the two things. So instead of getting like that, let's see how we can beat them intellectually. Let's look at how we can beat them legally. Let's look at how we can turn things around. And no, I'm not saying this is going to happen overnight. No, I'm not saying this is something that we can just jump up and do. I said, but these are things that really have not been done. But when push comes to shove, what the other side needs to know that people are feeling like that and people are ready to rise up. But it's how we do it, when we do it, and why we do it.
I couldn't agree more. And so here's the thing, and I get that question all the time. And, you know, I'm the type of person that, you know, I am a fighter. But what I want people to understand is you have to channel that aggression into positive, productive work. You know, the three most influential people that I know of the last century were Malcolm, Martin, and Thurgood. Without any three of them, we would not be in the moment that we are in right now. And it may look dark, but what I like that Thurgood did was he used his analytical mind to attack the legal structure that was oppressing black people at that time. And he filled the courts with cases that would overturn Plessy versus Ferguson, which was separate but equal. The issue that we're fighting against is the reasonable standard of the reasonable fear of an officer, which is a Supreme Court case. So we have to do exactly what Thurgood did. We have to file lawsuits upon lawsuits upon lawsuits until we get to the highest court in the land and they get tired of the same argument. They got tired of the argument in Brown, and that's what overturned separate but equal. We have forgotten that we have this great enclave of ancestors who have been through this. And we have to use those lessons from the past because there are more Thurgoods now than there were then. There was only one then. There are thousands upon thousands of African-American lawyers right now. And I take exception to the young man who said all lawyers are bloodsuckers. That is not true. Some people didn't even get in this game to make money. They got into this game to make change. And that's how you make change. It's changing the legal structure. And this is one of the few countries in the world where you can have a revolution without warfare. It's called voting. But if we don't vote, we don't put the people in power to hold them accountable to change the laws and to change the policies. So, no, I don't ever get tired because I know the weapons that we have that we can use to win. What I get tired of is the fact that some media does not cover the wins. They just cover the controversy. There is a controversial time going on right now, and we as independent media have to cover the winds to keep wind in people's sails so they don't get frustrated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, we got Officer Stan Mason, retired Officer Stan Mason on the line, 254-723, 254-723, you're live.
Hey, Val, thanks for calling. I'm sorry for the background noise. I'm down here in the ATL. I'm enjoying it, love it. Looking for a house.
Good.
Anyway,
we need to connect you and Attorney Griggs together. His protest is in a few weeks, so we need to make sure we connect the two of you.
Yeah, we definitely got to hook up. I've been listening. I agree with a lot, but, you know, having spent 25 years in this system and probably being one of the older people on the call, I will agree with the three spirits that the brother invoked, the three individuals that said they're part of the reason that we're where we are today, but I would disagree in that saying that my generation, which has dropped the ball with that old, as Malcolm said, old sit-down philosophy that was good in its time but has never evolved, is the reason we're in the situation we're in today. We're taking 1960 civil rights protest mentality and trying to apply it to 2018 problems. That is not going to work. The youth, like Brother Ali, I was listening, the frustration comes from watching people who we've typically given the mantle to, whether they're preachers, politicians, or police chief, the three pontificators, the P, who have taken us nowhere. R.E.B. period doesn't always mean reverend. Sometimes it means reverse. We're fighting civil rights legislation on voting right now that we thought we took care of back in the 60s. So I agree that the energy is there. But I think sometimes my generation, because, yes, I have a lot of law enforcement experience, but we feel like we should be the leaders because we have a title or we have experience in a profession. We have not prepared the young people today to be able to take this battle forward. See, I don't need to be leading anybody. I need to be an advisor, a trainer of these young people in the ways. I totally agree. We don't vote. An attorney will agree with me when I say this. We get a jury summons. The first thing we're looking to figure out is how to get out of it.
Exactly.
And then we wonder why there's so many white folks on the jury. See, Frederick Douglass said there could be no progress without struggle. It's inconvenient, but we've got to do these things. And the second thing is, I look at everything surrounding Nipsey. We have got to stop waiting until black leaders are killed. Then we want to follow them and make them martyrs. And we'll carry their banner for 6 months, and then we'll go back to doing whatever we're doing instead of seeking these brothers and sisters out while they're alive and signing on where we can help them and further the cause while they're here. Stop waiting for people to die. Before more people follow Martin Luther King after his death than when he was alive. The same thing with Minister Malcolm. So we're bypassing leaders in my generation has not effectively prepared the younger generation in order to deal with what is a trial like. And I'm certainly not going to speak for all black people, but many black people don't know a court proceeding until they find themselves in a suit sitting as a defendant. You know, we've got to start learning the system. Civics is not taught in our schools anymore. So how about we march down into to the school board and say, why isn't civics taught? Where you learn what the Constitution is. I was telling the lady yesterday, my daughter, I said, you know what's so sad about folks today? These kids don't even learn cursive writing. But everybody I've arrested told me they know their rights. Well, how do you know them? Because if you look, the Constitution is written in cursive. You got a translation of it. Now, that's just semantics, but we're not equipped in a society that, right. number one, is set up to keep us in a position that we're in. We can get angry and we can rile and shake our fists all we want. And I'm going to tell you now, this system is designed for civil unrest on a magnitude that none of you are aware of. And when we say let's arm and let's fight back, I understand that frustration. But at the same level, I say this, and I know from being a police officer, they're not going to target the people who are obviously armed. They're going to go target the ones who aren't. Cut off the recruits before you worry about the army. You know, I'm from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I remember what happened with the MOVE members. Down there in Philadelphia, the whole neighborhood got blown up. So we can't fight violence with violence. We can, but we need to stop being this, for lack of a better way to put it. I mean, I refuse to attend neighborhood meetings held in churches. I won't speak at them. Because when you hold a neighborhood meeting in a church to discuss issues in a neighborhood that's fired up and ready to produce, what have you just done by holding it in the church? You told the Muslims don't go, because many of them won't. You told the homeless, the hungry, the drug dealers, people who may have changed their lives and they have the expertise on the problem, they're not going to walk into a church, because most of our churches are judged when they walk in the door. So you've castrated yourself just by depending by what you choose to have it. Then we put the police chief at the top of the speaking order. For what? If you have a problem with police, it's no secret that the police chief is the instrument by which all laws are passed. He has some accountability or vicarious liability in the situation, the very situation that you're going to talk about. Have your meeting and get everybody on point. Everybody can't be the quarterback. Some people are good at speaking. Some people are good at research. Some people, and then you have to formulate yourself and present yourself to authority with decency and good order, with an agenda that's agreed upon by all people, and not necessarily have the good reverend up there at the front. He doesn't need to be there. If you've got attorneys that are believing in the cause, these people are experts for advice. Experts. Let them do what they do. Have one person who formulates everything. You may have one person who's an excellent speaker. Have that person present the idea. Passion is not always a good thing to have up front in a public forum.
Right.
Because passion scares white folks. When black folks are passionate, we're seen as angry. Trust me, I know that. I get it all the time. I'm not angry. I'm just passionate.
Right.
So we all have to find where we fit in this struggle and then assume our position. And then preachers going to have to take a back seat. I'm sorry. And I'm not calling out anyone, but I'm saying collectively, these black preachers have taken us nowhere. Nowhere. From Atlanta to Dallas to Houston to Miami. to Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington. There's black churches all over the place. You got police brutality running amok. So we're searching in the wrong place for leaders. We need to prime and prune and teach these young folks how to endure, be long-suffering, and not only give them strategies, but listen to theirs. These people have, they understand social media. They understand computers. We like to think we do because we can send a text message, but these younger people can teach us a lot. And that's, I think we need to prune them, and that's their greatest resource. They're frustrated because they see my generation do nothing but talk at church meetings and on CNN and MSNBC like we're doing something. We hadn't done nothing. And take people like the
right.
Tony and other young folks and funnel their energy into a – we need a new approach. This approach is not working. This is not 1965 anymore.
Right. All right. So hashtag – thank you, Officer Stan, for that. You want to say
so
something?
Can I just make one statement? And so
sure.
I agree wholeheartedly with what he's saying.
And the reason
why we have such a real issue with voter suppression and the issue of all these things is because of a Supreme Court case in 2013, Shelby County versus Holder, which reversed the Voting Rights Act of 1965, gutting the preclearance clause, which means you don't have to go through the federal government to get preclearance, and thus you have voter suppression, and now you have the rise of all of these tools that was used back then that are being used
mm-hmm.
right now.
Exactly.
So I agree with you wholeheartedly. Everybody has a tool to bring to this. I believe that the young people's passion channeled in the right direction will work, but we got to educate them and the masses to understand how this system works, to stop trying
exactly.
to get out of jury service, to stop trying to fight the system by fighting the system, but fight the system how the system works to change the system.
Thank you. And that means you got to get in the system to understand it. I was never the biggest fan of police officers, but I was one for 25 years. I love the job. I like what it stood for. But I know the system. I know how the machine is put together.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to take the machine apart a piece at a time because you want to rearrange the pieces. You don't want to destroy the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't just say, well, I'm anti-police, so throw the system out. No, that's not going to work. So you got to put skin in the game. Some of us who may not think we could be attorneys might need to study law. Some who think that I don't want to be a police officer, you may need to get into it. And it's necessary to learn the system to be able to serve and know what you're talking about. Policing is almost like a secret society. Y'all don't know. Val, you know some of it because myself and Darnell told you. But it's a lot y'all don't know. You think you know, but you don't.
You know, Stan, this is Cassandra. How are you?
Hi, Cassandra. How are you? Yes,
good,
ma'am.
Good. And I just wanted to make a point with that because I am that person that you're talking about. You know, I graduated from law school. I'm a law school graduate.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not go to law school to be in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
I went to law school so that I can understand legislation and understand
mm-hmm.
the laws and understand how it works so that when I got into my avocation, I knew what I was talking about. I didn't want to depend on others to tell me because I don't want to keep getting wrong information. So I needed
Amen.
To find out for myself how to do it.
Amen.
Exactly.
See that, but you're rare. That we need that. See, you're a cog. We take your cog. We put it with my cog, Attorney Greg's cog, Ali's cog. You put these cogs together, you now have a mechanism. You now have a machine. These young people are oil and grease. They make it run faster. They introduce new ideas. They say, we can sleep this down. We can do it this way. That's what we need to do. We got to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't do it by tearing each other down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right, guys. I appreciate your everything. And I hope that this helps. And I hope that everybody who's on this call, when I send you the link, that you share it, hashtag justice. For Jimmy, hashtag justice for Jimmy. Jimmy, soon we're going to need 100,000 signatures, so we need all hands on deck. Attorney Griggs, go on and give us that information again before we shift gears because I want to ask you a question about something else that is in the news. But go on and reiterate everything that needs to be done, everything that you need help with, and where we should be shifting the attention to include the mayor and police chief and also your social media information, please.
Okay. We need everybody to go and sign the petition on pushblack.com, Justice for Jimmy. You can reach me on all social media at Attorney Griggs on all social media. And I just want everybody to understand that this is the beginning of a case that we can change the outcome. We can give justice to this family and to this young man who was murdered by law enforcement. And we can show the whole world how we do this in real time. Like everybody said, it's not 1965 anymore. It's 2019. We can do this in real time very quickly and very efficiently. Need y'all to call the mayor, call the police chief. You can go to cityofatlanta.org to get the mayor's information, the police chief's information. But make sure you share that link at pushblack.com, Justice for Jimmy, and follow the hashtag Justice for Jimmy.
All right. Before we wrap this portion of it, does anybody have any quick final words? Going once, going twice. All right, let's take a little break here.
We're always interested in what you have to say about our live broadcasts. Please share your comments on our Facebook page or website.
All right, so again, just give us that contact information because we're in the second hour, and I'm going to chop this up to go on and give us some more Justice for Jimmy information and also your social media, please.
Okay. Again, Jimmy Atchison, 21-year-old young man, father of two, was murdered in the closet in Allen Temple in Southwest Atlanta on January the 22nd, 2019. We are fighting for justice. We're going into month four of the fight for justice for Jimmy. You can follow it on all hashtag, on all social platforms, the hashtag Justice for Jimmy. We will have the petition up on pushblack.com. We need 100,000 signatures, and we will be having a massive march on May the 24th from Five Points MARTA Station to the City of Atlanta Police Department demanding the firing of Sung Kim. So please help us get the word out, Justice for Jimmy, on all platforms, the hashtag.
Okay, and again, don't let me forget Officer Stan's website is stanmason.com. I want to put the two of you together. He just moved to Atlanta, so yeah. I know that he'll be in a position to assist you with some other things. So that'll be great. That'll be a wonderful thing. And then, yeah, I'm going to do my part on this end, and also we'll send you the link. And, yes, I'll see if I can get Cousin John a blank. What's his name? Whose show I got you on before?
I forgot, but it happens to me all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm looking right at his face. Begins with a B. Yeah. Boyce Watkins. There we go.
Oh, Boyce. Yeah, okay. Yeah, Boyce, that would definitely
Watkins.
Work.
Yeah. Back on his show to talk about this, and also Yvette Carnell. That was a recent thing that we did, and then also Attorney Tony John a blank. That was another one. He works at the Dash Studios, so I've been trying to get in contact with him. But yeah, so we're going to do what we can on this end to try and link you up with some people, and I do wish you the best of luck, and thank you so much. I appreciate you. You just don't know how much it means to me when you share information with me, and you think of me enough to do stuff like this with me, and yeah, you trust me enough with all your information. I love you for that. Thank you.
Well, anytime, and thank you for opening the platform. You guys have a great evening.
Yes, yes, yes. So he definitely deserves an applause again. That was a ton of great. Appreciate him so much for all that he does. Please make sure that you go to his website, GeraldAGriggs.com, GeraldAGriggs.com for more information. And don't forget that hashtag justice for Jimmy. Now, 1-659-301-659. Is your background okay now?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Tia Whitaker, how are you?
I'm good.
I had about 60 seconds before she shuts off the light. Yeah, can you give us a quick update? Because you got a link or something that I wanted to promote to add to today's episode.
Oh, it's just really about an event series that I am pushing now. It is a women's empowerment brunch called Ready, Set, Soar. We just had our first official event this past April the 14th in Washington, D.C., and we are headed to Delaware. You can check out details online. You can check out my Instagram, Fashion Life and Tea, or my website, fashionlifeandtea.com, for more details.
Thank you, and thank you to everybody who joined in today. I am Valerie Denise Jones. You were listening to a big exclusive special edition. Thank you so much. 929-477-1167, 929-477-1167. I hope you got something out of today. If not, just give us a shout-out on our social media, and we'll explain it to you. ValerieDeniseJones.com. Have a great rest of the day and an even better weekend. I love you to life. Thank you. Thank you to everybody who was brave enough to speak today, who pressed the number one, and I can't say that enough. I appreciate you so much. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your evening. Good night.
Give me a J.
Yay.
Give me an O.
Oh.
Give me an E.
E.
What's that spell?
Yeah.
What's that spell?
Yeah.
What's that spell?
The Judge Joe Brown Show, presented by Valerie Denise Jones. Uncensored truth with a legal twist. Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 929-477-1167. Or visit MissValerieDeniseJones.com for details.
Let me bid you good night.